welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Ariana Pelosi. Doctors Eric Singy from MD Anderson, Nicholas Hornstein from Northwell Health, Mark Bronstein from NYU Langone Health, Neera Lopategi-Leah from the Ohio State University, and Min-Tri Nguyen from Stanford Health spoke about the medical oncology boards and the career transitions that followed in an article that was recently published in the journal Oncology. In the article, the clinicians discuss crucial study topics, how to approach this major career transition, and how to combat burnout.
So how did you manage that transition to fellow to from fellow to your current appointments at MD Anderson?
Yeah, so I would like to say that, you know, staying at your own institution, going from becoming a fellow to becoming an attending, I was hoping it would be more of a seamless transition, but that's not always the case. And so I think the way that I say it is that the transition was both exciting and humbling, to tell you the truth. Moving from fellowship at my own institution to faculty required this mindset shift, if you will, where you go from primarily being a learner and absorbing all this information to now becoming the sole primary decision maker and the educator. And so that's that shift. And so I was fortunate, very fortunate, to have strong mentors here at MD Anderson throughout my fellowship, and they continue to guide me through navigating my new clinical responsibilities as an attending, making sure that I was meeting academic expectations, and making sure that I was able to develop a niche within my own institution with regards to lung cancer, and that being young onset lung cancer. I think the other big key is just establishing early collaborations is huge, and being very intentional about your career goals that can really help with a transition.
So oncology is always an evolving field. So what specific areas would you tell someone to focus studying on when they're prepping for the boards?
Yeah. So for the boards, what I did was focus on the big high-yield topics, right? So the ones that are going to be making up the largest percentage of the board exam. So thoracic oncology, breast oncology, GI oncology, and then malignant hematology. Those are like really the big topics that are frequently tested on the board. So I devoted a lot of my time for study for those specific subtopics.
So outside of those subtopics, what advice would you give to someone who's currently studying?
I think be consistent. So even if you can't study for hours every day, just commit to a schedule that you can maintain. Also use your question banks very actively. I personally annotated my answers. I built my own review notes that I was able to look at, especially right before the board exam. So use those question banks actively.
So how did you go about balancing studying for the boards with also having your clinical responsibilities and kind of that work-life balance? And maybe do you have any tips for that time management?
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone has to go through this at some point, right? And for me, I was moving to a new city. I moved from Houston, Texas to New York. And on top of that, had a, you know, 1.5-year-old daughter. So that is personal life if there ever was one. And in the midst of all this also was taking my first steps as an attending, both in terms of learning research infrastructure and trying to develop clinical trials, and also, you know, getting patients and like being in charge of telling them what's going on and how we're going to treat their cancer. So the balancing act was one where I really tried to focus on preparing for the boards before I started my job. I took an extra month off before starting things just to make sure I was really fully moved in and I had time set aside to study. So in the lead up to starting my job, I took something like 2 weeks where I more or less locked myself in my office for 8 hours a day and watched a review series. I used the MD Anderson series, you know, studied the areas I felt I needed to brush up on. And really went through the question banks to try to complete them before I started attending. Because when I started attending, I was on service, inpatient, and it's a lot. And the amount of time I had to commit to studying went way down. So just before I took my boards, I actually was on inpatient service and, you know, had barely minimal time. But I think preparing ahead of time, trying to focus during fellowship itself and taking notes longitudinally was really helpful so that when it did come time to sit down and take my boards, I went in with the best preparation that I thought I could have. I will say though, even with all that, I thought I totally failed oncology boards. It was a mess. I actually did fairly well, but if anyone's going through it right now, just know you probably did better than you think you did, and it'll be okay. It's graded on a curve, and yeah, you'll be okay.
Bit. Would you recommend any specific areas that up and coming students, I guess, should focus on given the current trends and advancements in oncology?
Yeah, so I would say don't focus on the new stuff. The new stuff will be on there, but like CAR T, BiTEs, like tarlatamab, whatever, it will not affect your score. You might see questions and freak out, but they will be thrown out because they are too new. So anything in the last 2 years or so that's come out is not going to be something that will impact your ability to pass the boards. The things that they tend to test on are things that don't change. So are they going to ask about in non-small cell lung cancer, if you have, nodal disease, and get chemo RT, should you give OC afterwards? Maybe that question showed up, but maybe that question was also thrown out because it's too new and it's changing. So I would say focus on the things that won't change. What are the toxicities of medications? That will never, ever change. Even if the indication and the label changes, that won't. What are things in hematology that won't change? Things like talking about Kell or Duffy or, cross matching. That never is going to change. We have that science worked out. So try to focus on the things that are not really sexy right now, like the hot topics, because you hear about them all the time and they might be top of mind. They're not going to be what prevent you from passing the boards.
But looking at your position as a program director, how do you best prepare your fellows?
Yeah, another excellent question. I work with a great team directing our fellowship program, and one of those individuals includes my associate program director, Dr. Michael Schusterman. He's really a forward-thinking GI oncologist, and he approached me a few years back about the fact that while we can train our fellows to pass their boards and help them secure jobs, we really weren't doing much to teach them the non-clinical aspects of success as an attending. And to this end, we created a curriculum called Transition to Practice that spans the length of the year and then repeats annually and includes topics such as networking, running clinical trials, billing, marketing your work, and professional use of social media, just to name a few topics. We also meet with the graduating fellows to give them specific pointers for their future practice plans. And of course, remind them that we are still here if they need us for any clinical or career advice.
So, as a program director, what piece of advice do you have for those currently in fellowship about to transition to becoming an attending?
Well, you've got what it takes. Being a great doctor is not about knowing how to approach every clinical scenario that can come up. It's more about caring, devoting yourself to your practice and your patients, and knowing where to access the information you need and to whom you can turn for advice on complicated cases. I would also say to try to think beyond practice in terms of what you want your career to look like 5 years or 10 years from now, and how you can support your community through volunteer work, and most importantly, not to neglect your health or your loved ones.
So, has there been any aspect of oncology care that you maybe should have reviewed more for before you took your boards, or perhaps one that wasn't touched upon as much?
So one of the best pieces of advice I received from a senior colleague was to closely review the ABIM blueprint for medical oncology board exam. So again, it offers a really detailed breakdown of the topics that are covered and also the relative weight, which I found really helpful when I organized and kind of built my study plan. So I would say, again, not trying to memorize everything equally, but being more strategic was one aspect. And then, as part of our hematology and oncology fellowship training program, we had access to a board review course. We also had access to the ASCO self-evaluation program, which includes a question bank and another question bank. So, using all those resources, I found very helpful. And that's, of course, in addition to the conferences that are part of I think most fellowship programs. And so I think, again, a combination of all of those resources is what really helped me prepare for boards.
And then, what advice would you give to those who are currently studying?
So I think everybody learns a little bit differently. There's a lot of resources available out there. For me, it was using a mix of resources. But again, it all depends on everyone's learning style. Some people learn from watching recorded lectures, others from reading chapters or just doing questions. But again, I think it's important to give yourself time to reinforce the high yield topics through repetition. And again, regardless of whatever resource you choose to use, I think taking full advantage of the resources during training, rather than a last minute tool is can be really helpful. And what I've also found, very helpful, every now and then we would do board review conferences, in which again we would kind of go through questions together. I found that to be really helpful if, that's not something that the fellowship program does, like having a small study group, I think can be key. Because again, people remember different pieces of information and we would share tips and tricks of how we remember certain information. And again, just discussing challenging topics with peers can really uncover gaps you didn't even realize you had. So again, I think that's something that can be really helpful too.
Going back to your experience as a leadership coach, can you speak a bit about that and maybe how that helps prepare fellows for the attending positions?
Yeah, this I would say is the perfect one of the I wouldn't say the perfect. I would say this is one of the ways in which we can add that additional support from that transition from fellow to early career and early career to experienced oncologist. And that is, there are a lot of cognitive demands, emotional demands, boundaries with work, boundaries with patients. These are things that you have to sort of balance or have to deal with when you are an early career oncologist. A lot of this was sort of taken care for you as you're a trainee with ACGME requirements, work hour restrictions, things like that you didn't really have to worry about, right? Like those things were sort of already looked at under the program that you're in. Once you are out of a program, once you are out of ACGME, no one says that someone has to keep certain number of hours for work hours for you. You have to create those boundaries yourself. And you also have to create these boundaries within you and your patients as well in terms of what you can and can't do. So I think the work as a leadership coach or even just a coach in general is really great for asking those really important questions and working through some of these problems with someone who has never experienced these issues before and who has difficulty sort of talking about this with people who are within their own either workplace, because they don't want to be seen as someone who's, asking for too much or, is seemingly not being a team player. But there are, I think, emotional, experiences that you have to go through that you want someone to talk to that has the experience that can walk you through it. Losing your first patient. Nobody really talks about that as a early career oncologist. And also, you don't want to seem like you can't handle the job with your colleagues. So I think having a coach to walk through a lot of these issues, especially leadership roles as well, when you first get into the role of a staff attending, you are now leading a team of clinical and non-clinical people. And I don't know of many training programs that actually teach you leadership skills to help you facilitate some of this, right? Do I do a team huddle? What is a team huddle? What's a very effective team huddle? How do I communicate what I need with my team and create that sort of trust within my team? So these, I think, are skills that a leadership coach and a coach in general can help walk a early career physician through.
What advice would you give to those studying or who are preparing for their new career as an attending?
Specific to studying, I think you just have to trust with what works for you. You've gotten this far, I think, with testing and getting through these types of things. For me, I know what works, which is I need dedicated time. And I would I would argue most of us will need dedicated time. It's just a matter of how much and when. For me, it's just usually before the exam, I need like at least a month block where I know I can dedicate like just, sitting in the coffee shop for 4 hours or 6 hours, doing all the work beforehand so that I know that I can leisurely read through my notes and I think I can retain that information that way. I don't know if that same strategy will work for everyone, but I know that everyone at this point has had that has had, to do this before and has done something that works for them. Just stick with it. I think the worst thing you can do is sort of try to recreate a new wheel and then find that it doesn't work for your wagon.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.